Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand, Dorothy Gundy, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Susan Shand.
For years, the International Criminal Police Organization has helped fight crime across national borders. Among other things, the organization called Interpol works to support cooperation among law enforcement agencies, and it has helped catch thousands of criminals. But Interpol is increasingly being used by some governments to pressure and persecute political enemies who live in exile. That is the opinion of United States officials, lawmakers, and immigration lawyers. The persecution begins with a warning, known as a red notice. Interpol sends the notice to member countries that a person is wanted for arrest. Any member can request a red notice as long as it stays within Interpol rules. The France-based agency does not investigate the charges. Last year, Interpol gave out more than 13,000 red notices. Many of them are believed to be little more than persecution. Critics say the abuse has become a part of the U.S. government's immigration system. U.S. officials often treat red notices as arrest warrants to target asylum seekers and other foreign nationals. They may have false, unproven, or political charges against them. Acceptance of an Interpol red notice can, and often does, turn ICE officials and our own immigration judges into agents of repressive governments, said Sandra Grossman. She is an immigration attorney. She recently spoke to the U.S. Helsinki Commission, an independent U.S. government agency investigating the abuses.
It is difficult to estimate the number of asylum seekers and other immigrants affected by persecutory red notices. Ted Bromond believes that anywhere from 25 to 100 people could be affected. Bromond is an immigration expert at the Heritage Foundation, a public policy center in Washington, D.C. Members of the U.S. Congress are trying to pass legislation to put a stop to the abuses. Last month, a group of lawmakers proposed the Transnational Repression Accountability and Prevention Act, or TRAP. Their bill would make it illegal to arrest someone based only on a red notice. The TRAP Act would stop Interpol abuse in the United States, Nate Schenken said at a Helsinki Commission meeting. He is the director of special research at the Freedom House, a U.S. government-aided, non-governmental organization. Interpol is not a police agency with power to investigate an arrest. It is more of an information service for its 194 members around the world. It lets law enforcement know about wanted persons with red notices. The U.S. Justice Department states that a red notice is not an arrest warrant. ICE officials say they investigate red notices to ensure they are lawful. Critics say ICE's policy of using a red notice as an arrest warrant has affected innocent foreign nationals hoping to live in the United States.
In 2017, ICE agents reportedly arrested a Russian businessman at his asylum interview in the United States. The man was fleeing what he claimed was Russian persecution. Sandra Grossman investigated the reasons for the arrest by filing a Freedom of Information Act, FOIA, request. She claims that the FOIA said, "Individual is the subject of a red notice, danger to the community, extreme flight risk, apprehend immediately." Interpol later canceled the red notice. Grossman said the businessman is waiting for a court to hear his case. He now lives in what she calls legal limbo. A Chinese citizen represented by Grossman has spent months in a detention center because of a red notice, she said. "The judge keeps him in detention only because of the red notice," she noted.
Turkey is believed to be the country to have most abused the red notice system. Russia is second, followed by China and three Central Asian republics, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan. U.S. officials have dismissed at least 8 red notice warnings by Russia for Bill Browder, a famous Russian government critic. "We cannot allow Interpol to be weaponized against journalists, dissenting voices, and oppressed minorities," said Edward O'Callaghan, a U.S. Justice Department official. He spoke at a recent celebration marking Interpol Washington's 50th anniversary. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
I'm Susan Shand.
Scientists say they have discovered an earthquake-like event that can happen during a hurricane or other powerful ocean storms. They are calling it a stormquake. Researchers came up with this name after studying seismic events on the seafloor during such storms. They found that the shaking can last for several days and feel as strong as a magnitude 3.5 earthquake. The discovery was made by a research team led by Wenyuan Fan, a seismologist and professor at Florida State University. His team examined seismic and ocean records from September 2006 to early 2019 in an effort to identify possible stormquakes. A report on the study was published in Geophysical Research Letters. Intense energy from hurricanes and other severe storms can create very large waves in the ocean. These waves then interact in some places with solid earth under the sea to cause intense seismic source activity, Fan said. "We can have seismic sources in the ocean just like earthquakes within the crust, he added. The exciting part is seismic sources caused by hurricanes can last from hours to days. The researchers found evidence of more than 10,000 storm quakes between 2006 and 2019 in coastal areas of the United States and Canada. Seismic activity was recorded off the coast of New England, as well as off of Florida and in the Gulf of Mexico. In Canada, evidence was found off the eastern provinces of Nova Scotia and Newfoundland, as well as British Columbia's Pacific coast. Storm quakes were found to have happened around continental shelves or seafloors containing flat land and at lower depths, the research showed. The researchers considered other weather conditions when they tried to identify whether a seismic event could have been a storm quake. The seismic activity had to happen on a stormy day or have some other connection to a storm. Other seismic events, such as earthquakes, had to be ruled out as causes. Even with evidence of so many storm quakes happening, it was not known until recently that such events even existed. This is mainly because scientists studying earthquakes have generally considered ocean-caused seismic waves as background noise. The research found that major U.S. hurricanes had produced a lot of storm quakes. One example was Hurricane Bill, a storm that formed 10 years ago in the Atlantic Ocean. Bill strengthened into a Category 4 hurricane before weakening to a tropical storm and hitting Newfoundland. The researchers said the storm caused numerous seismic events off the northeast U.S. and Canadian coasts. Other examples of storm quakes were 2008's Hurricane Ike and Hurricane Irene in 2011. Ike led to storm quake activity in the Gulf of Mexico, while Irene caused seismic events off the coast of southern Florida. The researchers noted that not all hurricanes produce storm quakes. For example, the study found no evidence of storm quakes off the coast of Mexico. Also, no such activity was recorded in areas along the U.S. East Coast, starting in New Jersey and continuing all the way down to Georgia. The team noted that even Hurricane Sandy, one of the most costly storms in U.S. history, did not cause a single storm quake. Wen Yuan Fan says this suggests that storm quakes are strongly influenced by the physical shape of the seafloor's surface and seafloor conditions. Fan added that there are still lots of unknowns about storm quakes. But he said discovering them suggests we are reaching a new level of understanding of seismic waves. Fan said that he hopes the discovery will also lead to improved study methods for hurricanes, which in the past have mainly been observed from satellites in the sky. Now we are able to understand the phenomenon, or at least track part of its passage, through the solid earth as well, he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. The national election of 1832 put Andrew Jackson in the White House for a second term as president. One of the major events of his second term was the fight against the Bank of the United States. In 1836, the bank's charter ended, and the Treasury Department took responsibility for most of the government's finances. Many people considered Jackson's bank veto one of the most important actions of his presidency. Another major event of Andrew Jackson's second term as president involved Texas. The United States had given its claim to Texas to Spain in 1819. Then Mexico won its independence from Spain in 1821. After that, Texas belonged to Mexico. During the 1820s, Americans poured into Texas. Most of the settlers came from the states of Tennessee, Mississippi, and Louisiana. Many owned slaves and brought the slaves with them to Texas. American settlers in Texas were able to buy land for almost nothing, but they had to promise to join the Roman Catholic Church. They also had to promise to obey the laws of Mexico. Over time, Mexican leaders saw the danger of continuing to permit Americans to settle in Texas. The Mexican government sent an official to inspect conditions along the border with the United States. The official reported that as he traveled north through Texas, he saw less and less that was Mexican and more that was American. He said there were very few Mexicans in some towns, and these Mexicans, he said, were extremely poor. He said the American settlers were not becoming true Mexicans. They were not speaking Spanish. They were not becoming Catholics, and they were not accepting Mexican traditions. The official said the situation in Texas could throw the whole Mexican nation into revolution. He urged Mexico to send troops to occupy Texas. The situation between the settlers and the Mexican government became increasingly tense. For the most part, there was little that President Andrew Jackson could do. The United States had a friendship treaty with Mexico. The government in Washington had a duty to remain neutral. In April 1833, the settlers in Texas held a convention. They prepared a list of appeals to the leader of Mexico, General Santa Anna. One of the Americans, Stephen Austin, carried the appeals to Mexico City. He spent 6 months negotiating with the Mexican government. General Santa Anna promised to honor all the requests except one. He would not make Texas a Mexican state, although he said that might be possible someday. Stephen Austin was satisfied. He left the Mexican capital to return to Texas. On his way home, to his surprise, Austin was arrested. He was arrested because of a letter he had written earlier. He had written it when his negotiations with Mexican officials seemed to be failing. He had said it might be best if the people declared Texas an independent state. Austin was put in prison in Mexico City for a year and a half. Stephen Austin urged the people of Texas to remain loyal to Mexico. But talk of rebellion had already begun. The settlers were calling themselves Texans. In November 1835, representatives from all parts of Texas held a convention to discuss the situation. They had no plans to take Texas out of the Mexican Republic. In fact, a proposal to do that was defeated by a large vote. However, the Texans took action to protect themselves against Santa Anna, who had declared himself dictator. They organized a temporary state government. They also organized a state army, and they made plans for another convention. Before the Texans could meet again, Santa Anna led an army of 7,000 men across the Rio Grande River into Texas. The first soldiers reached San Antonio on February 23rd. The Texas forces withdrew to an old Spanish mission church called the Alamo. On March 1st, the second Texas convention opened. This time, the representatives voted to declare Texas a free, independent, and sovereign republic. They wrote a constitution based on the Constitution of the United States. They created a government. David Burnett became president. Sam Houston was to continue as commander of Texas forces. On the second day of the convention, a letter came from the Alamo in San Antonio. The letter was addressed to the people of Texas and all Americans. The commander of Texas forces at the Alamo, Lieutenant Colonel William Barrett Travis, wrote, "I am besieged by 1,000 or more of the Mexicans under Santa Anna. I have sustained a continual bombardment and cannonade for 24 hours and have not lost a man. The enemy has demanded a surrender at discretion. Otherwise, the garrison are to be put to the sword if the fort is taken. I have answered the demand with a cannon shot, and our flag still waves proudly from the walls. I shall never surrender or retreat." The letter from the Alamo closed with the words, "Victory or death." Representatives at the convention wanted to leave immediately to go to the aid of the Texans at the Alamo. But Sam Houston told them it was their duty to remain and create a government for Texas. Houston would go there himself with a small force. The help came too late for the 189 men, perhaps even more, at the Alamo. The defenders included some Tejanos, or Hispanic Texans, and the famed frontiersman Davy Crockett. Santa Anna's forces captured the mission on March 6th. When the battle ended, not a single one of the defenders was still alive. Sam Houston ordered all Texas forces to withdraw to the northeast, away from the Mexican army. One group of Texans did not move fast enough. Santa Anna trapped them. He said the Texans would not be harmed if they surrendered. They did. 1 week later, they were marched to a field and shot. Only a few escaped to tell the story. Santa Anna then moved against Sam Houston. He was sure his large army could defeat the remaining Texas force. President Andrew Jackson and Sam Houston were close friends. When told of Houston's retreat, the president pointed to a map of Texas. He said, If Sam Houston is worth anything, he will make his stand here. Jackson pointed to the mouth of the San Jacinto River. The Battle of San Jacinto began at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. There were about 800 Texans. There were twice as many Mexicans. The Mexicans did not expect the retreating Texans to turn and fight, but they did. Shouting, "Remember the Alamo!" the Texans ran at the Mexican soldiers. 18 minutes later, the battle was over. Santa Anna's army was destroyed. On May 14, 1836, Texas President David Burnett and General Santa Anna signed a treaty. The treaty made Texas independent from Mexico. Historian Daniel Feller says President Jackson had to be careful when responding to the situation in Texas.
Whether or not Jackson approved of the insurrection in Texas, whether or not he saw it as complicating or easing the path toward eventual assimilation of Texas, there's no doubt that he wanted Texas as part of the United States.
Jackson did not want Mexico to blame the United States for the revolution, even though the American government had been trying to buy Texas for many years. Jackson believed the country should spread as far west as it could. But he also worried that giving statehood to Texas would deepen the split between the northern and southern states. Texas would be a state where slavery was permitted. For this reason, the anti-slavery leaders in the North strongly opposed Texas statehood. Jackson told a representative from Texas, William Wharton, that there was a way that statehood for Texas would bring the North and South together instead of splitting them apart. Jackson said Texas should claim California. The fishing interests of the North and East, said Jackson, wanted a port on the Pacific coast. Offer it to them, the president said, and they will soon forget that Texas is a slave state. Jackson and Wharton held this discussion just 3 weeks before the end of the president's term. Wharton spent much time at the White House. He also worked with congressmen, urging the lawmakers to recognize Texas. He was able to get Congress to include in a bill a statement permitting the United States to send a minister to Texas. This bill was approved 4 days before the end of Jackson's term. On the afternoon of March 3, 1837, Jackson agreed to recognize the new republic led by his old friend, Sam Houston. 9 years would pass before Texas became an American state. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us next time for The Making of a Nation, American History, from VOA Learning English.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.